there, Star Wars fans, and welcome to the Argana Digest, your weekly Star Wars briefing on what's new and what's neat. This is episode 4, recording on March 5th, 2018, and as always, I'm your host, Laura Duncan. It's a bit of a grab bag this episode, but I have a great show for you today. I am so happy to have the ultra-smart Susan Bailey on Around the Universe coming up in just a few minutes. I also have a new computer program, so the interview audio sounds way better. Yay, technology! First bit of news this week is the Oscars. The Last Jedi was up for 4 Academy Awards, but won 0. However, we have the greatest Oscar of all time, and that is Oscar Isaac, who plays Poe Dameron, hero of the Resistance, and my space husband. He, Lupita Nyong'o, Kelly Marie Tran, and Mark Hamill, all stars of Star Wars, were there at the Academy Awards, looking fabulous, might I say, and Mark Hamill presented an award. It has been 40 years since Star Wars first appeared at the 1978 Oscars, winning 7 Academy Awards and nominated for 3 more, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Supporting Actor for Alec Guinness. So Star Wars definitely had a presence at the award show. And hopefully we can do a sort of Return of the King thing and win a bunch of awards for Episode 9 for work that was done throughout the entire sequel trilogy. Although with new Star Wars movies coming out every year, it seems statistically likely that we will rack up a few more Academy Awards at some point. And speaking of Oscar nominees, John Williams has announced that he is finished with composing scores for Star Wars movies. In an interview recently, he said that Episode 9 for J.J. Abrams will be his last one. I don't blame him. The guy's been making incredible scores for 40 years for Star Wars, and maybe it's time to do something else. Maybe it's time to retire. Maybe he wants to take up fishing. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's your next career, John. We certainly wish you well here at the Argana Digest, and we thank you profoundly for your incredible service. Star Wars just wouldn't be Star Wars without the music. It's what takes a cheesy sci-fi movie and elevates it into the level of true art. Even the prequels, which we all agree are pretty terrible, had Duel of the Fates, which comes from John Williams. So anything good that happens in Star Wars, you can thank John Williams. I know I will never hear Han and Leia's theme again without getting just a little misty-eyed. So thank you, John, for all your hard work. We look forward to your swan song in Episode 9, and then enjoy whatever it is you're doing next. And we're not all business here at the Argana Digest. We also have news that is fun. And this next bit of news is definitely that. So this weekend, Saturday Night Live featured basketball star Charles Barkley. And from what I understand, it wasn't a particularly fabulous episode. However, SNL produced a horribly expensive skit that was apparently cut for time. It's really random, but it is Star Wars featured. It is one big long Star Wars joke with some pretty amazing special effects and costume. I happen to find it quite funny. My husband found it pretty funny as well. So I'm not going to spoil the joke because in the true tradition of Saturday Night Live, it's kind of one joke over and over again, but I will link the skit in the show notes so you get a chance to see Kate McKinnon doing her best Rey that's not really Rey, and just check out the entire skit, which I think addresses a question that Star Wars fans have been clamoring for an answer for some time. So clearly we've got some Star Wars enthusiasts over at Saturday Night Live. Hopefully they will have some more cast members from the Star Wars universe hosting in the future as Solo and Episode 9 gear up to go into theaters. So if you haven't seen the sketch yet, I really suggest checking it out. It's pretty funny. That will be linked in the show notes so you can go right from here to watching the Saturday Night Live skit. Next bit of news is not quite as fun, but maybe a little bit more interesting. The new Star Wars book, The Last Shot, is coming out in conjunction with the Solo release, and an excerpt of the book has been released on the internet. This book is apparently a 3-part story featuring the adventures of Han and Lando over the course of their friendship. The cut that was released on the internet features a 30-something Han Solo caring for infant Ben Solo, and Lando Calrissian shows up. This is important to me because it puts Lando at the scene of the crime, so to speak. A big complaint for episodes 7 and 8 is that Lando Calrissian was not a part of them. I think this shows that Lando was still a part of Han's life when Ben was a little boy, so it's not too much of a stretch to think that Lando could still be a part of the Star Wars universe when Ben becomes Kylo Ren. I'm sure JJ is probably already finished with the script, but now that there's no Leia, Luke, or Han around, it seems like if he doesn't have Lando, he should definitely stick him in there. particularly with the enthusiastic reception across the internet of Donald Glover as the young Lando Calrissian. The people want Lando Calrissian. The people deserve Lando Calrissian. So here's hoping that JJ is in on it and delivers us the Lando Calrissian that we all desire so much. So as I mentioned before, Han, Luke, and Leia, either for actual death or character death, are no longer around to populate Episode 9, except as Force ghosts. Well, that might not be true. The Disney cartoon Star Wars Rebels had its finale this week, and it introduced time travel into the Star Wars universe. Now, time travel is a sci-fi staple. Doctor Who uses it, Star Trek uses it, but Star Wars had never actually had it as part of the canon yet. You might say, Rebels is a kid's show. Well, it is, but it's also been used as a beta test for the Star Wars universe, sort of weaving in new elements with the old to see what works and what doesn't. The producer of Rebels, Dave Filoni, is a pretty powerful guy in the Star Wars pantheon. A lot of things that we've seen in the sequel trilogy has come from Rebels first. So, for example, the Force flight that Leia does through the debris of the spaceship, that happened in Rebels first. So we have a precedent of things happening in Rebels bleeding over into the big screen adaptations. So this time travel begs the question for me, can we bring Han Solo back? I don't think that Kylo Let the Past Die Ren is going to be the one to do it, but I think it's a tantalizing open door. You know, maybe Rey goes back for him, maybe Poe, I don't know. But in any case, I, for one, can't wait to see the repercussions in the Star Wars universe now that we have introduced this all-important element of time travel. What do you guys think? Should they bring Han back? Should they bring back a young, computerized Leia, maybe played by her daughter, Billie Lord, who's already in the trilogy? Or should we just let the past die? What do you think? Let us know. You can hit us up on Twitter at The Organa Digest or email us at organadigest@gmail.com. Well, that about wraps up the news, so please enjoy the interview with Susan Bailey when we come back. Welcome back, Star Wars fans, to the Organa Digest. We are here, and it's time for Around the Universe, where we talk to a Star Wars fan about something they know a lot about that you might not know anything about. So you learn something new and make a new friend. I am so happy to introduce you to our guest today. This is a friend from totally different fandom, the Sherlockian fandom, but it turns out we are both pretty deep into the Star Wars fandom as well. So I would like to introduce to you my good friend, Susan Bailey. Hi, Susan. How are you?
Hi, Laura. I'm good to be glad to be talking to you.
Awesome. So, Susan, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
As you said, we met in the Sherlock Holmes fandom, but my academic background is in religious studies. So I've done a lot of studying about different religions around the world, and I've been a Star Wars fan since I was about 3.
Okay. Excellent. So this goes deep. Well, given that, you should have no problem with our Star Wars quiz that we give all our guests. There are no wrong answers on this quiz, so it's an easy one. What is your favorite Star Wars planet?
Oh, wow. I'm going to go with Naboo.
Okay. It's a popular one. It's a beautiful planet, I hear. So, and what is your favorite, either a vehicle or a piece of technology?
Got to be the Millennium Falcon. I mean, I remember pretending that I was in the Millennium Falcon as a child and like flying around the universe. So yeah, I'm going to go with that.
I knew I liked you. and then last question, who is your favorite, a non-main character in the Star Wars universe? And you can interpret that however you like.
Holy cow. Okay. I can't remember his name, but I think it was Grand Moff Tarkin that was played by Peter Cushing. That's a Sherlockian answer.
That's a great answer. He's very, very evil, and I like him. All right. Well, you have passed our quiz with flying colors, so now it's time to go into your area of expertise. So you're here today to talk with us a little bit about Eastern religions as they relate to Star Wars. Is that right?
Yeah. What I really specifically want to talk about is some religious sources for the idea of the Force. One of the things I'm really interested in is like, what is the Force? What kind of ideas in our human universe prompted the concept of the Force?
Okay. Well, what is it, Susan? Tell us.
Well, I have a few ideas I want to tell you about, and they come from Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism.
Okay.
So first of all, I'm going to start with Hinduism because that's my area of specialty. So I think it would be easy to compare the force to the Hindu concept of Brahman. So this is an idea that stems back philosophically to as early as the 3rd century. And Brahman is the essence of all being. It is the source from which all phenomena arise, but it itself doesn't necessarily have qualities. It can be nameless, all omnipresent, all conscious, and it suffuses all of the phenomenal universe, but it isn't eternal and undying.
Okay, well, yeah, that sounds a lot like a force. So can you say the name of this concept again?
Brahman. Brahman.
Okay, great.
In the Chandogya Upanishad, they talk about the concept of Brahman in relationship to Atman. Atman is the self. And there is the idea that in certain philosophical schools, that the self is just a small particle of Brahman, and your goal is to rejoin it. So by connecting yourself, you can connect to the greater universe. Hmm. And this is something that exists in everything, but isn't necessarily visible. So in that scripture, they give the example of salt in water. When you put salt in water and you stir it, eventually it disappears and you can't see it. And yet the salt is there. The salt is like Brahman.
Hmm. So the goal, if you want to become one with the force, is in this scenario, we are the salt and we want to be stirred into the water.
So the water is the phenomenal world.
Okay.
And you can't see the salt that's there, but you know that the salt is there because you can taste it. So it's there. So
the salt is the force. We are not
correct.
The salt.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But one little grain of salt, that's inside of all of us. Every living being has a tiny particle of Brahman in it, and that's our soul, at least in one philosophical school. There are other philosophical schools, but to me that's a very similar concept.
Yeah, it sounds very similar. So what else can you bring from the Eastern tradition into Star Wars?
Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is the concept of qi in Taoism. So qi is like life energy or life force.
And like Tai Chi? Is that the same?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so Tai Chi is a method of accessing that. All martial arts have some kind of connection to qi. So, for instance, in Kung Fu, they have a practice of cultivating two different kinds of qi. One is physical force, and the other one is spiritual force. So you cultivate the one by meditation and the other one by physical training. And so these are kind of the guys that you can see on the internet who like break blocks of cement with their hand, and you think, wow, that's not possible. So what they try to do is to channel the qi in their body to aid them in combat. So kind of like force users, they use this life force that's in all things, aid their physical force that they use with using muscles and weapons is physical force, but there's a spiritual force behind it as well. And they also have a concept of things being that there's two elements there. There's a dark element and a light element that's yin and yang. But it's not really good and evil like we think of it. It's more sort of like one is like feminine, earthy, fertile. The other one is more active, hot, masculine. They're not really dark and light in the sense of like good and evil, but they have to come together to achieve balance. So that's why you see in the yin yang symbol, inside the black area there's a spot of white, and inside the white area there's a spot of black. They balance each other.
Now I could be wrong, but I feel like in episode 8, when they're on the meditation temple in Okto, there's sort of that mosaic on the floor. I feel like there was something that looked a lot like a yin and yang symbol there. Was that, I mean, do you have that memory as well? It's been a while since I've seen it.
I know what you're talking about, and I think it's very reminiscent of that. There was sort of a circle where there was a light half and a dark half together. And I think one thing that's also important to point out about these concepts is that the idea of Brahman or Chi or whatever is inherently sort of amoral. That meaning they're not necessarily good or evil. It's just sort of the power or the essence that's there. It's not sort of like our idea of God, which is, you know, God is all good and like the devil is all evil. It's not really like that. So the concepts of what dark and light and good and evil are completely different from what our concepts are.
So it sounds like these Eastern religions that you speak of, these analogies, if you will, to the Force, these are more suited for the sequel trilogy, that the original Star Wars, you know, 4, 5, and 6 that we grew up with, those have more of a good and bad, and this sort of amoral gray area thing, that feels a lot more like the sequel trilogy to me. Do you see that as well?
Yeah, I definitely see what you're talking about, because, you know, when, like, there's this segment that I really love when Luke is teaching Rey about what the Force is, and he shows her, like, within the Force, there's life and there's death and there's sun and there's cold and there's comfort and there's harshness. All of those are part of the Force. And he's not really telling her, and this one is good and this one is bad. Like, they're just all part of it together. And that seems much more similar to these type of concepts, which are saying, you know, death is a part of life, and, you know, cold and heat are all part of it together. And they really... It's foolish to kind of like try and separate and cling to one side and not embrace the other side. So yeah, it's definitely a concept, an evolving concept, I guess, which is what made me really excited about, you know, episode 8.
Which is cool, which is very cool. Were there any moments in episode 8 in particular, since, you know, it's kind of on all of our minds, that you just went, oh my gosh, this is so Taoism, this is so Hinduism, like this is obviously has parallels to these religions?
There were quite a few moments, actually. I could probably go on for it about it for a long time.
Well, what are some of your favorites, I guess?
Well, you know, everything that that Luke does at the end, and sort of, you know, meditating and physically projecting himself. And I think you can see in a lot of the things that Rey does that she is trying to sort of channel something, and she doesn't even really know what it is. And she tells Luke, you know, there's something that's always been inside of me, and it's always been awake in there, and I don't know what it is. So she's basically telling him, like, I perceive that force inside of me, and I need you to help me learn how to use it. And I mean, sometimes, even in like the end of episode 7, in the battle scene between Rey and Kylo on Starkiller Base, you could argue that like Rey taps into the dark side of the Force by using her passion. You know, I think this is partly why Luke is scared of her, and yet at the same time, he kind of knows he's not capable of achieving the same kind of balance that possibly either of the other two young people are.
So the other young two, you're talking about Kylo Ren and Rey specifically?
Yeah.
And is there anything in these spiritual traditions that sort of gives you a clue on what you think might happen in episode 9 with Kylo and Rey? Because that certainly occupies a fair amount of my imagination. So I'm wondering if it does yours as well.
It certainly does. I think we need to go beyond the concepts of sort of good and evil that we had in the first trilogy. And I think that you could say that it really depends on what the choices are that people make, and not necessarily what they're trying to access. So I think you could say that both of them could be gray. That maybe like Kylo is dark gray and Rey is like light gray, but I don't think that they have to be diametrically opposed to each other. I don't think that one of them has to die for the other one to succeed. Hmm. Yeah, I actually had a thought that came to me yesterday, which is, not really related to Eastern religions, but I was thinking about the Apostle Paul in the Christian tradition. Originally, he was a big persecutor of Christians when he was a Jew, and later he changed. And I'm not trying to say that one tradition is good and one tradition is evil, but he advocated killing people. And then he joined that group and they accepted him. So I think there's a way that it's never too late to turn back. That's, I guess, what I would say.
Well, that makes me very happy because I'm rather attached to both of them.
Well, I think all of these people are like human and they're trying to, like, nobody's perfect. You can see Luke's not perfect. Yoda's not perfect. Obi-Wan is not perfect. So, and that's part of the flaw in the Jedi tradition is that because it's so renunciative, mm-hmm. that it allows people to really go to a completely different extreme, being out of touch with compassion or humanity, as well as being out of touch with, you know, like anger or fear.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in the Buddhist tradition, you know, the Buddha always says fear leads to anger, and anger leads to suffering. Uh-huh. So what the Jedi were trying to do is follow that instruction to not suffer. And it's a hard road because it means detachment. So it's a much easier, faster road to try and channel your anger and your pain, a highly destructive road.
So we have some precedent for the possibility of Kylo maybe, you know, becoming Ben again and joining the resistance. Well, I feel like we could talk about this for 6 more hours, but unfortunately we are out of time. So I guess we'll just have to have you back on the podcast some other time.
All right. I have more to say.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Susan.
My pleasure.
Well, that's all we have time for this week, friends. I'm off to read my just delivered to my Kindle adaptation of The Last Jedi. So don't worry, there will definitely be a review of that in next week's show. I hope you enjoyed. And remember, you can always reach out to us here at the podcast on social media. Email is organadigest@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @TheOrganaDigest. Let us know what you think and if you'd like to be featured in an upcoming segment of Around the Universe. The star you hear on the show might be you. Anyway, we'll see you next week. And as always, may the Force be with you.